Hello, good morning. Welcome to Reservoir Church. It's so good to see all of you and be able to worship with you together this Sunday morning. My name is Lydia. I'm one of the pastors here at Reservoir, and Reservoir is a center-set church centered on Jesus Christ. No matter where you are, far or close from Jesus, or questioning, or have faith and love Jesus, whoever you are, wherever you come from, Jesus is welcoming you here. So you are welcome. So thanks for being here, especially if you're new, extra welcome to you. And I want to point everyone to just a few announcements in our program, especially this card. If you're new, we'd love to get to know who you are. Fill out your name and your email if you want to start communication with us. We'll just let you know of some of the things that's going on in our community and get you connected. You can mark things like becoming a member, interested in a welcome dinner, or volunteering as we're kicking off this fall season and school's back and our worship services go back to two services next week. So write that down, 9:30 or 11:30. And as we kind of kick off a new ministry year, we're in need of more volunteers. So if you're interested in volunteering, you can mark that. And if you're interested in community groups, that'll be kicking off really soon as well. So get connected, get to know us a bit more, and we'd love to get to know you too. On these cards, we also love to just, you know, stay in touch with all of y'all. And so we have this thing called the question of the day. It's a brief moment before we kind of get into the message to give us a time of reflection. So today's question of the day is, what's one change you badly want to see in the world? You can think of a few things. One thing. What's one change you badly want to see in the world? So let's take a few moments. Have to time of reflection. I think it's taking some time, just quiet and go, it's so rare. So while we're in this worship service, why don't we do that for a moment and ponder on that question, and you can jot it down on this card and we'd love to hear what you're thinking. So what's one change you badly want to see in the world? Let's take a few moments. All right, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us your thoughts. You can drop these cards off a little later in the service when we have baskets coming around. That time is also a great time if you consider Reservoir your church. Your financial giving and gifts are welcome during that time too. But if you're interested in giving online, you can do that online as well. That's the welcome cards. I want to point your attention to this page in your program now. This is called Events and Happenings. It's all the events and happenings at our church. Double reminder, next week we'll go into two services. And then so next week we'll also start Kids Church back up as well. And there will be a kickoff of Steve will be telling us about what's coming in the fall today and kind of kicking off this new series called Embodied Faith. So that's what's coming for us in the fall. And the main big event that I want to point you to is the church-wide retreat. I moved to Reservoir in January, about eight months ago now, and I've heard about this retreat again and again. I hear like everybody goes, like everybody you see here, like a lot of people go. So it's a great time at a nice hotel by Oceanside. That sounds beautiful. So get registered now, and I think there are limited space, so get registered for that now. All right, I think that's it for announcements. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Lydia. I'm Steve, one of the pastors here. I feel like, Lydia, you should know when you moved here, because you sort of carry the mark on your body in a way. Like, you have a walking reminder. It's like, move on. All right, anyway. Hey, great to see you all. What a weekend this is in Boston. It's at least on the street where I live, like incredibly quiet. A lot of people disappear, except everybody that's moving. So I have three kids going back to school this week. We're a city of schools and teachers and students, and this time of year, moving trucks as well. And so I wanted, before I talk today, to pray for and encourage all you that are going back to school one way or another, which I think we'll find out is a lot of us. But before I do that, I realized too, I'd love to pray encouragement and blessing for people that have moved or are moving this weekend. So we don't do a lot of, we let people be relatively anonymous in these Sunday services if they like. We feel like that's helpful for people to feel friendly. But no one's going to be made to stand. But I am going to invite two groups of people in just a second to stand up if you are willing or would like to receive the prayer of the people around you. And if you don't want to, just, you know, stay seated and you can still be prayed for that way. It's sort of a gesture of identifying. I'd like the prayer, but optional. So the first group is going to be people that are moved or have moved or are moving this weekend. We'd love to pray for you. And then after that, like students, parents, teachers, people who work around schools would love to pray for you as well. So folks who have moved or are moving this weekend, are there some of us here? Or we're all like with our moving gear? There are some, yeah, all right. Thanks for standing. If there's anyone else, we'd love to just pray for you, your muscles and your new home. I think there are a lot more people moving in this community and they're not here because they're moving. So hey, thanks for being here, those of you that are moving. And let's pray for you first, okay? God, we know this is, a lot of us move a lot in this city, and moving can be some weird mix of exciting and hopeful and like horizon setting, and also terrifying and tiring and exhausting. And however our friends who are with us standing up are experiencing moving this weekend, whatever mix of promise, hope, fatigue, frustration, whatever's gone well or poorly, we ask you, God, to encourage and bless them in this week in a particularly powerful way. Could you give them a deep sense of home where they're going? Could you give them peace with where they're leaving, both the places and the people and the things involved? God, could you provide for all their needs, which I expect are many, needs around money and furniture and fatigue and logistics and like tenants and all the things that they need, and you know, the inner needs too, of just to feel settled and to arrive, to be home. We pray, God, that you'd create a deep sense of home for each of these people and for all of us this year. In Jesus' name, amen. So the second group of people I'd love to pray for before I talk today are folks associated, like, who just gone back to school or about to go back to school. And I'd love to do that, like, as broadly as possible, because we have people that just went back to first day of school or about to do that. But again, parents, teachers, people that, like, administrators of schools, anyone that this is, like, a back-to-school season, could you stand up if you're willing? And we'd love to pray for you. I think there are more of us in the room, people for whom this is a back-to-school time of year. And so whether you're standing or you kind of know that's true sitting, can we just, this is a lot of us in this region, so can we just pray that this would be a great school year? That sound like a good thing to pray for? I think we could use that. All right, so let me pray for that too. And, you know, just notice who's around you. And if you know their name, maybe kind of in your own heart, kind of wish the things we're praying, you know, for this person in particular, but kind of send your prayer to anyone you see or know around you too. God, this is so many of us. It's like the rhythm of our city, school year in, school year out. And I guess I feel led to pray in the second, God, that, like, what are we doing? Like, why are we all doing this? There's got to be a reason, like, other than just rhythm. And I pray, God, that we'd sort of sense why this week, that we'd have a sense of purpose and encouragement from you, of, like, why am I studying? Why am I teaching? Why am I supporting these people in my lives? Like, what does this year mean? What's the promise in it? And I pray, God, that we would kind of both feel in our gut or in our hearts and know in our head a sense of promise over this year. And pray, God, that you would deliver on promise for us this year, that you would make this a year of greater security, of greater confidence, of greater purpose, of greater success if we're kind of floundering and need that, of greater resources, of greater help and strength in whatever we're called to do in these schools, whether it's supporting someone else or leading or teaching or studying, or I feel like, God, for some of us, maybe just trying to survive and kind of see if that needle can shift from surviving toward thriving. Could you do that for us, Jesus? Could you be the Spirit that is the things you promised to be, our advocate, our comfort, our help, our strength, our teacher? Could you be all that and all that we need, Jesus, in this school year? Amen. Good to be with you all at the start of this school year, the start of what for us is this church year coming up. The last time, other than as a parent, I was getting ready to go back to school was for my final year as a principal over in Watertown a number of years ago. And one of my favorite colleagues there, I just bumped into this week, so I'm going to talk about it a little bit today. One of my favorite colleagues there was my friend named Mike. He's a social worker who offered counseling and groups to kids who are anxious or depressed, or just plain angry. Mike's a dynamic guy. Around the time I left, he retired from his work in the schools, but he keeps a small practice open, and he's the founder and leader of a running club that I participate in some. Mike is a pretty special guy. He's easy to connect with. He's really down to earth. He's empathetic and kind, but he will push you, too. Now, I knew Mike by reputation as I was arriving in Watertown. He's a bit of a legend in that system. I knew him as a guy who could relate to even the toughest kid. Now, Mike was a pretty tough kid himself when he was young, and I was really grateful for the work that Mike did. But one day, Mike drew me into his work firsthand. Now, he was meeting with a group of boys in his basement office, and he asked me if I would join them. So down I go, and I sit in the office. And I look around, and I see kids I've suspended. I see kids who are, some of the guys who are rumored to be amongst the school's primary drug dealers. Many of these young men are kids that a lot of families and a lot of faculty and a lot of administrators would have loved to remove from the school if they could. Problem kids, they'd be called. Mike doesn't have illusions about these guys. He'd say to me, oh, most of what people think about these kids is true, and like more. They don't know the half of it. But they're not problems. They're people. Mike was trying to help these guys kind of find their way in life, out of generational problems, out of bad ends that might be coming for them, into life, like a good life. And one of these guys had lost a family member that week. That's why they were together in this group on this particular week. And Mike's rallying this group to encourage this one guy who's had a death in his family. And he's encouraging them at the same time to name their own pain and loss in this circle. He wants them to push into and push through their pain instead of just kind of numbing out one way or another. And so Mike's real, like naming some of his own stuff as an older guy. He's incredibly present to each guy in the circle. He listens. And he kind of he pushes, he helps people push each other a little bit. And these, well, what I knew is like angry, alienated kids are crying. They're asking for help. They're really super present to each other. It was so good. And you know, there was something for me there too, like being drawn into this circle by Mike, not as the guy in charge for a change, but not as a judge or as a critic, but as a participant, like in a way that gave me a permission to be, maybe for the first time, like present to these guys. Not in my role as principal, but just like Mike, as another man, as another human being. That was really powerful. That circle changed me. I hope it made me a deeper person. Mike certainly showed me what it's like to kind of grab each moment and live it like with more presence and more gentle purpose. I think indirectly, Mike was also doing what they call like managing upwards. He was showing me like the kind of principal he wanted me to be. showing me, in some ways, like how to really live, how to do a job in a way I would love, and how to kind of do a job worth loving. Now for us, as this summer rolls into fall, as we start this new year in Cambridge and Greater Boston, I find myself thinking about the things in that story. I find myself thinking about presence and purpose, about a great life. I've been thinking about this a little bit for this whole church. Like, who are we at Reservoir? Why do we exist? What are we called to be and do at this time in our culture when church going is on sharp decline, when church itself seems like a shrinking, maybe even a dying industry? What does that mean for all of us? And I think my thoughts about church dovetail with some encouragements for all of us. Maybe our own kind of be like Mike moment, like seeing if Jesus can't nudge us toward more presence and more purpose, toward more of the good life Jesus has for us, and maybe through us a little bit too, everywhere we go. Jesus called people to something all the time. He was a seriously present and purposeful person himself. He is always nudging and inviting, pushing and provoking. I've just spent the past few months in a near daily imaginative prayer on the passages of the gospel records of the life of Jesus. It's part of this year-long spiritual exercises of Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuits, where for months you read these little snippets from the life of Jesus, and you picture yourself in the story, and you kind of see where that takes you. And this year, I found I really like Jesus. He inspires me. Jesus speaks to me. But I've also found that Jesus unnerves me. That Jesus is more kind of present than me. He's more confrontational than I am. He's braver than me. Like, even when he's super kind, he's always also kind of pushing. And I want to read one of those moments. You printed some scriptures in your program today. One of them I'll probably not talk about at all. Talk for another day, but some of the others I'll use. So from Mark 2, here's one of these moments. Jesus went out again beside the sea. The whole crowd gathered around him, and he taught them. And as he was walking along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were also sitting with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the scribes of the Pharisees saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, they said to his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus heard this. He said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, I came to call, not the righteous, but sinners." So Jesus is calling Levi for sure. He sees this fellow Jew, a tax collector, a collaborator with the Roman state oppressors. But like, what else does he see? Does he see Levi's estrangement? Like how he's resented by his own people, but never really accepted by the ruling class either, maybe. Does he see his boredom or his fear? How he hates his life, but he doesn't know quite how to get out of it or how to change of it? We don't know. We just know that he sees something, he calls Levi, he accepts him, and he also pushes him. He invites him to go somewhere new, to do something better. And the first place Jesus calls Levi is into his own home to eat and drink with his colleagues, his fellow tax collectors, and to eat and drink with Jesus and some other friends of Jesus. And of course, because they lived in a little first century village where nothing was private, to also eat and drink under the noses of their disapproving religious neighbors who call them all sinners, rejects, disapproved. Kind of like the guys I sat with in that circle in Mike's office, right? Problem people. But listen to how Jesus doesn't just call Levi and friends. He calls and pushes the self-righteous neighbors too. Jesus has no illusions. He says that his new friends are sick, and he kind of likes that because he's a doctor. Like, need is the only prerequisite for life with Jesus. Can you hear him push the neighbors too, though, to the ones who call themselves righteous? Jesus calls them what they call themselves. He kind of accepts their terms, right? And applies, hey, if you think you don't have need of God or Maybe think you have need of God, but you don't have the need of me. Then fine, have nothing to do with me or my friends. Leave us alone as we find our way together. And if you want in, like, you know how. Like, reach out. Admit you're sick too. Jesus walked with people who knew they had need, and he helped them find peace, rest, healing, hope, and love. And part of that journey was his acceptance and his inclusion of people, his kind of wonder-working goodness and empowering of small faith for great things in their lives. But then part of it was also doing the kind of work that my friend Mike has done for me, enlisting his friends and followers in the work, sending them to join Jesus in making all things new. After Jesus calls followers like Levi, who the tradition tells us is also known as Matthew, he spends months, maybe years, pushing them toward the kinds of values and habits and lives that will bring peace, rest, healing, hope, and love to more people and more places. And several times Jesus does this by engaging his friends in a riddle or a paradox. He says stuff to them like, if you want to be first, try being last for a while. He says, if you want to be really great, practice being a nobody, a servant. And if you want security, sense that you're like always at home, no matter where you go, like stop grasping for it. Don't try and pile up possessions, wealth, acclaim. Give stuff away. Pile up love. Be rich in heart and rich in connections. Jesus again and again is always saying these kind of troubling, pushy little riddles, calling his friends to like less external achievement and shine and more to internal wellness and connection and depth. He's pushing a mode of life and a mode of leadership too, like to resist the way things are and to be part of making known the way things really ought to be. We've printed in your programs maybe the most famous of these little riddles, these pushes from Jesus. It's from Mark 8, and it goes like this. What Jesus says in a kind of dramatic moment with his team, for those who want to save their life will lose it. Those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Our days are kind of short. Jesus knows this, like we're all gonna die. So between now and then, like how do we gain real life? We can be anxiously protective. We can focus all our time and our energy on our own needs, on our own little resentments, kind of grasp for as much in the world as we can get. But Jesus says that's how we lose. We live by joining Jesus in good news, love, and service, by kind of letting go. This reminds me of one of my favorite interviews I've discovered this year. I expect some of you have discovered it because there are like millions and millions of YouTube hits, and it's a very old interview. But it's an interview of Bob Marley with his news reporter in the late 70s, like just a couple years after Bob Marley had become kind of more of an international phenom. People were still trying to get him in like pop culture now. And the reporter asks him, have you made a lot of money out of your music? Marley kind of thinks for a minute, and the answer is, money? I mean, how much is a lot of money to you? And the reporter's kind of surprised that he has to, like, you know, think for a while and says, that's a good question. Have you made, say, millions of dollars? And then Marley just says, no. He's like kind of a genius in the interview, a genius of rhythm. So the reporter asks, are you a rich man? Marley answers, what do you mean? What do you mean by rich? And the reporter then is like really surprised to be the one being interviewed now and like to have to define the philosophical of nature like live on television. So he just sort of stumbles and says, do you have a lot of possessions? Like, do you, you know, have a lot of money in the bank? And then Marley ends the conversation, or I like to think he's trying to start a whole new conversation by saying, possessions make you rich? No, I don't have that type of richness. He says, my richness is life forever. I love this interview. You can Google it. It's like very easy to find. God, it's so chilling. It's so deep and funny. Like, how do you get that kind of rich? Like, rich in life. How do you get that? I think we've had one, like, kind of mass media, like, moment in the life of our nation, a chance to sort of pause and notice this the past couple days. Our country has watched the funerals of two people heralded as really different kinds of great Americans, John McCain and Aretha Franklin, past 2 days. They were both extraordinarily rich, actually, in possessions, millionaires many, many, many times over, Franklin through her music, McCain through his marriage, and they both famously actually made lots of financial missteps. But right now, nobody really cares about either side of that. I mean, it just doesn't interest anyone. We're interested in them because of some measure of goodness that's being remembered, of love and of service that made them great. Right, McCain, like in this era of partisanship, of kind of resentment-driven politics, we've heard McCain's honor and decency celebrated, talked about again and again and again, his courage, other qualities about him. America now has five living presidents, current and former. And during these two funerals, three of these people were out giving eulogies. One stayed home on his humble farm, preparing to teach Sunday school today. And the fifth went golfing while tweeting about his petty resentments. I think there you have it, right? Like, rich or poor life. Like, there it was for us to see. And Aretha Franklin's funeral. Did anyone else here watch part of it? So it was live streamed. It was kind of a cultural moment. Who besides me watched parts of this? Quite a few of us, okay? 9 hours, I think. Anyone watch it all? 9 hours. That's like an event, right? It's a lesson for us here at Reservoir. 9 hours. There were a couple tough moments, a couple awkward moments I will not talk about today. But on the whole, I think, wow, it was the wealth and the depth of the Black church tradition on display. It was also like a call to life again and again, like to not shut it down, to not shut ourselves down, to let our talents like really flourish for the world, to let our light shine, to use our voices, like literally in Franklin's case, or in whatever way we have voice, to use our voices for justice and liberation and renewal. It's like incredibly soul-stirring. Like those of you who didn't watch any, like you need to catch parts. Incredibly moving. It's like encouragement to be rich in life. A little vulnerable moment here. I'm wrestling for what this means for me as well. In my mid-40s, and I've joked with a number of you about how at around my age, we are statistically at the least happy time in life for all Americans. It's true, on average, at least in this country, I don't know about worldwide, but on average, like people's happiness levels kind of like hit a certain mark and then steadily descend throughout adulthood into their mid-40s. And then for not all people, but for many people, again, on average, it tends to kind of tick up and continue to tick up towards people's elder years. Leaving you, like, if you're in your mid-40s, like at that kind of low point. It's actually not really a funny joke to talk about because it's too true if you're there. I'm probably like dispositionally a happy guy in a number of respects, but midlife does kind of pile up on you. You face your own limitations. You face the loss of some dreams, some illusions, the reckoning with all that inner work that you've been putting off for decades. Hints of failing health that you know are just going to continue to accelerate down the line. You're either less successful or rich or happy than you thought you would be, or you're all those things and it means less than you thought it would. And if it sounds a little bit depressing, particularly those of you that are not there yet, it is, right? So just to be real. Some of this, not all of it, but some of it is true of me. And one of the things I've been doing this year to find my way forward is this thing I talked about earlier, these year-long spiritual exercises of Ignatius of Loyola that I mentioned. Ignatius designed this program of prayer, of kind of inner work and reckoning, actually for people earlier in life, for young men. There were men then who wanted to train to be Jesuit priests. They had a kind of series of exercises and things they would do over a month during a silent month-long retreat before they could be initiated into this movement. But Ignatius made this program available for any woman or men who would be interested to go through over a year as part of their ordinary lives. People didn't want to become Jesuits, but just wanted the benefit of this work. And I'm doing that this year in search of some more vision, in search of trying to pivot as best I can in this middle portion of life into my second half of life. Because most of us, truth be told, don't pivot very well. There's a Franciscan priest named Richard Rohr talks a lot about the addicts and the fools, and the meanies, and the depressants that a lot of us become in the second half of life. when we don't humble and limit ourselves, we don't deal with our own pain, we don't learn to spend ourselves on others, but try to just spend ourselves only on ourselves. Rohr has a lot of like really rich insights as an older man into how that goes really poorly for lots of people. And as I read him and as I think about these things, I think like, I want the humility. Like, I want to be part of the healing, not the ruining of the world around me as I continue to grow up. I want to be rich in life. And I'm looking for help from Jesus for that. And I mentioned that most of these spiritual exercises are kind of imaginative prayer exercises in the Bible. But a few of them are other situations that Ignatius came up with. And one of these that has struck me most this year, he calls the call of the king. Now, context here, Ignatius was a failed knight. He was a young man of privilege in the early 16th century, and he dreamed of having these gallant adventures and that kind of thing until a cannonball smashed his leg, and he was drawn to Jesus while he was laid up instead. But he was always something of a wannabe knight, and that never went away. And so I think the call of the king has some of that heroism and adventure and patriarchy all over it. And in the call of the king exercise, you imagine yourself standing before a king who plans to bring in justice to all lands and on spreading peace, rest, healing, hope, and love everywhere. And he invites you to join him, paying great costs, but also receiving great rewards. And you imagine yourself before this king, hearing this call, or this invitation, and you're invited to just notice your reaction. And don't force it, don't control it, don't judge it, but just kind of notice how you respond. And when I did this exercise, I looked at the king and I said, no way. I am not going. I thought, I don't trust this guy's motives. Like, who would ask for that much for you to be part of their mission? I'm not sacrificing my life for some supposed noble cause. So I noticed, like, turns out I'm more of a 21st century cynic than a 16th century wannabe knight, person of my times. I expect you are. But then Ignatius invites you to do the exercise a second time, but this time the language changes a bit, and it's not a kind of random king you imagine, but you imagine Jesus to be saying these things to you. And I printed the language, at least as my guidebook kind of translates or paraphrases it in this in your program too, and I want to read it to you and tell you how I responded and what this means for me, and maybe what this means for us, so it's not for me to decide, and maybe some what this means for Reservoir Church too. I'll mention, as you take a look at it, if you do in your program, there's some talk of Jesus' kingdom in this, but I've printed it, it's not a typo, like with a parentheses around the G to show that we can read this as kingdom, or is this word kingdom too? And this is language that I think was invented or coined by Ada Maria Isasi Diaz. She's a late Cuban-American theologian. The idea that she developed and published is that in English, this phrase kingdom of God, which is central to the teaching of Jesus about God's presence and leadership on earth, that that phrase in English can kind of smack of dominion and colonization and patriarchy, like the medieval kind of reign or quest of a king. Whereas the word kingdom, just take out the G, all of a sudden it sounds like an inclusive, ever-expanding family. And that might capture some of what Jesus was getting at a little better, that word. Anyway, I appreciate that observation, so I like to use both words now, so that's why it's printed that way. Anyway, let me read the call of Jesus from Ignatius. And you can use whichever of those words you like. And if it helps you to just kind of imagine yourself hearing it for a moment, you can kind of close your eyes for a second if you really want to go there. But picture Jesus saying these words to you too. And kind of what response do you notice in yourself? It goes like this. It is my will to bring all the world into the glory of my Father's kingdom, to rid all lands of injustice and bring peace, rest, healing, hope, and love. I would like you to join me. If you agree to join me, and I hope you do, you will walk as I walk and live as I live, laboring with me, being alert and ready at all times to do my bidding, following me in the pain so that you may also follow me in the glory. And you shall have a place at my table, a part with me in my victory, and I will call you friend. I can't entirely explain why these words continue to speak to me as they do. Last night I was reading these again, like quietly to myself, and Grace on the other side of the room, and she's like, are you like getting emotional or do you need to sneeze? So I was like, maybe both. I love my wife. But I'll try a little bit to explain. I hear these words, and unlike the first king, again, I'm not asking you to respond this way, but I'll just tell you about my response. Unlike that first king, I really trust Jesus. I like Jesus. I feel safe with Jesus. Jesus actually didn't even ever literally say these words in his life. Ignatius wrote them, but they sound like Jesus to me. The Jesus who himself is rich in life forever, who does justice and loves mercy, who wants his friends to join him in bringing peace, rest, healing, hope, and love to all people in all places. I feel like I can give my life to some kind of little piece of this. I love that I'm invited to, that we're all invited. Those might be my favorite words here. I would like you to join me, or as I hope you will. Maybe next to my other favorite words, that Jesus calls me friend. The cost and reward kind of seems irrelevant to me. Like, the rest just feels so good that it's like, yeah, sure. If there's cost, there's reward, that's great. But I find, like, when I hear this, I want this great purpose for my life. And I want to do these things, like, in the spirit of Jesus, as influenced by Jesus as I possibly can pull off. It's partly for me, like, some of you are better people, and you don't need this as much. But I find, like, I do not naturally pull this off very well. I'm not just going to, like, turn into my friend Mike on my own. That's not like never been the natural trajectory of my life. We've all got our barriers and our problems. In my case, like I'm too scattered. I have great ideas, like poor follow through. It's kind of part of my struggle. I'm too driven and stressed out too. I'm actually really not naturally like very present to people and situations in front of me. The way like real transformative love and leadership requires that kind of deep presence. Not so natural for me. Like, I need Jesus to do this for me. I need Jesus to, like, remind me again and again, like, I'm loved, I'm invited, I'm taken care of, I can let go, I can be present. Like, Jesus is bringing rest, hope, peace, healing, and love. And, like, that's happening already. I can join in. I need a lot of that reminder. So I find myself, when I read and hear the call of Jesus saying, I find myself saying, like, yes, yes, yes. Like, when I do this, it seems to nudge me, best I can tell. It seems to nudge my availability for this work, for this life. It seems to help me take my eyes off myself, like just long enough to let it take root a little more. I really want this for this church too, for what it's worth. That we, Reservoir Church, could know deep in our bones that Jesus is inviting us to join him in this gallant phrase, like ridding all lands of injustice and bringing peace, rest, healing, hope, and love to all people and all places. That's actually the vision of this church. It's not in those like knight-like words. We put it this way, maybe like simpler, plainer, less elegant language, that we just want to see as many people as possible in Cambridge, in Greater Boston, and beyond, connecting deeply with Jesus in our church and thriving as a result, really flourishing as a result. Like that's why we exist. That's what we want to do. We want this, though, like at an interesting time and place to be a church thinking you could do that. Like the whole like church brand is sort of on fail in this country. Like it's not a rising stock if you were to invest in like what's like some growth industry that's going to help this country. Like church is not it. Church going something of a dying industry, like at least a shrinking industry in a time and place. Sunday church going is on the decline in all 50 states and in pretty much every type of church tradition. And so let's just go local for a sec. If you think about whatever neighborhood you live or work in, think about what you know of this whole city or region if you want to go big. Think like if Jesus plans on ridding this land of injustice, if Jesus plans on bringing lots of peace, rest, healing, hope, and love to all people around here by getting them inside the walls of this church or other churches like it, then like Jesus is not doing a good job or we're not doing a good job. Like it's not working. It's not likely to work that way anytime soon. But I actually take encouragement by this because I don't think Jesus is constrained by the walls of churches that bear his name. And I know the Spirit of God doesn't only move in and around churches or church people. Ignatius, the founder of the Jesuits, knew this too. This was supposed to be the whole point of the best of that tradition. Jesus may have all kinds of ways to connect people with more of Jesus and to flourish their lives and flourish our city and its institutions. And I think Jesus might just be calling us in this time and place to welcome his invitation to be part of this purpose, to join him in ridding all lands of injustice and to bringing peace, rest, healing, hope, and love to all people and all places. Our church this year, at least, is going to try to keep doing this more. We're going to try and remind each other that what we do here on Sunday, for instance, isn't the main event in our lives. I think most of us know that, but it also isn't the main event in what Jesus is doing in and through us all. What we do on Sundays, what we do on community groups, what we do in church programs and church community is to help us make the kind of connections with Jesus and with friends that grow that deep work of God in us, that help us say yes to Jesus and yes to life in our spirits and our values and our living. And it's to help equip us to kind of find our voice and our power in doing this kind of work of Jesus we're called to in all places that we live and work and make our way. We'll try to get better at kind of and deeper at equipping one another for purpose and presence in the good life, kind of nudging, pushing, inviting each other into it, to hear and respond to the sweet, liberating encouragement and push of Jesus. I know that as I keep listening to this call of Jesus, and as I, in particular, for me, make my way through midlife, trying to say yes to both the inner work of Jesus for me and the outer work of Jesus in me, through me, maybe, I hope I'm getting a little more brave and a little more present, like my friend Mike I've talked about. I hope in time my kids, my neighbors, my wife, and my friends find me to be someone who's bringing more peace, rest, hope, joy, and healing into their lives. That's not all particularly natural for me. I hope I do my part, that we do our part in ending some injustice. I hope all of you feel like I help you experience a little more peace, rest, hope, healing, and love. And then we all sort of feel like, oh, we can spread those a little more to people and places too. This isn't like a job Jesus gives us. This is, I think, what gives life. It's the call of Jesus, not just the purpose of this church. I think it's the purpose of our lives. It's a really good one, too, I think, to say yes to Jesus in this way. So in the spirit of this year and some of the hopes we have for it, I'm trying to close my talks not with kind of random invitations, but with a spiritual practice of the week, try and connect with Jesus and connect to God's work of love in us, making us those people who can say without embarrassment, I'm rich in life. And also an invitation that might grow your voice or grow your leadership, that might help you thrive or flourish or be a means to someone else's thriving or flourishing. So in that spirit, I invite you to consider these two things that are in your program, a tip for whole life flourishing. I just love to invite you that with God's help and the help of friends to see is this is for us more of a new year moment than January 1st. See what it means to make a new or make a deeper investment in people or in the things that will bring you greater riches of life. We'll ask Jesus if he wants to nudge us toward anything in particular, but what it means to make a little deeper, a little new investment to that which would bring us greater riches in life. And then if you want to be game to try and see what this invitation could nudge in you, I'd encourage you to try each day this week. You can just hold on to your program. Imagine standing next to Jesus and Jesus saying these words, the call of Jesus to you. Try that just once a week for 1 week. And the idea, again, is not to get yourself on board. It's just to imagine it being said to you and just to notice your reaction. There's no actual right or wrong reaction. The goal is to not force any particular reaction, not control the moment, certainly not judge your reaction, but just hear these words from Jesus in your imagination and just notice, how do you react? What does that do in you? I want to take a moment to just consider these invitations as we close and as our band comes up. So I'll be praying. I'll be inviting you to pray. You can, again, kind of full freedom here, join me as much or as little as you want in this exercise. But I would invite you to let other people at least have the moment. So You can close your eyes, or you can like make sure you're not staring at someone else and let them have their freedom to have their moment of prayer. Pick up the thing I dropped. Let's just take a moment, okay? Start with just a brief moment of silence. Just kind of get comfortable in your chair, take a deep breath. That was like our bell. All right. Take a deep breath. Jesus, if there's a gift you'd like to give any of us right now, to the extent that we're able, we make ourselves open to that. It's like a super mysterious and weird thing to picture ourselves listening to an invisible God present by spirit that we can't measure in this room, but that's part of our jam here, God, and we would like freedom to try. So Jesus, thank you for a quiet moment. Thank you for the gift of life. Thank you that you're so, so good. And Jesus, if you would like to call us, any of us, some particular way, encourage us to a deeper, kind of truer, richer life. Encourage us in any, kind of nudge us, push us in any way toward that which would bring richness of life. We'll take a moment of silence, Jesus, in case you'd like to encourage us in any way. Jesus, thank you that you don't pressure, you don't manipulate, you don't control, you just kind of invite. And we ask Jesus if there's any particular way that you would like to communicate to us that you are rest, peace, healing, hope, and love to us. We'd make ourselves open to hear that as well. And lastly, I'm going to read this call of Jesus one final time. Jesus, if you'd like to stir any response in us, we'll close my time on this bit. It is my will to bring all the world into the glory of my Father's kingdom, to rid all lands of injustice and bring peace, rest, healing, hope, and love. I would like you to join me. If you agree to join me, and I hope you do, you will walk as I walk and live as I live, laboring with me, being alert and ready at all times to do my bidding, following me in the pain so that you may also follow me in the glory. And you shall have a place at my table, part with me in my victory, and I will call you friend. Thanks for calling us friends, Jesus. We ask that in the rest of our service, if you'd like to continue to nudge our minds or hearts toward you in any way, that'd be awesome. We welcome you, God. As I turn things over to our band, I'm going to invite you in just a moment to stand if you're able, and to know there are people that in this room that apart from what we'll do together with these songs, if you would love someone to pray for you, and we have people on the back right of the sanctuary who would love to do that. They'll pray for you for anything that you like, but when they met this morning, they felt kind of particular encouragements in their spirit as they tried to ask God for leading and what they could pray for you today. So different members of the prayer team felt like if there's anyone here, there's a really sharp pain in their left heel or has heart failure or concerned about heart disease, they would love to pray for God's healing in your body. Also, if there are people that have really significant anxiety about starting back at school, they would love to pray for you for that. Or if you're looking for a job or transition to employment and that's going hard, they'd love to pray for you as well. So if those things speak to you, again, no requirement, but I'd encourage you to have someone pray for you if you like. Why don't you stand if you're able as we turn things over to our band.